Cannonball Adderley Quintet with the Jive Samba, Julian Cannonball Adderley on alto sax, Brother Nat on cornet, Yusuf Latif on flute, Joe Zawinul on piano, Sam Jones on bass, and Louis Hayes on drums. This is from their 1962 album, Jazz Workshop Revisited. This is Lead Stories. I'm Retrace Fleed. And things are getting kind of interesting around here. you know, I'm going to come to a subject that I've covered quite a bit lately, but that's later. But first, I want to talk about an issue that keeps cropping up of late. And it seems as if nobody wants to really take it on. It's the matter of the president's mind. Does he still have one? Is it still in working order? This is a piece that appeared in USA Today as an opinion piece. It was authored by a psychologist. A psychiatrist and psychologist. His name is John Gartner, and he's a former assistant professor at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. The piece is titled "Trump's Cognitive Deficits Seem Worse. We Need to Know If He Has Dementia." That's the headline. So, let me share with you some of his observations. If Donald Trump were your father, you would run, not walk, to a neurologist for an evaluation of his cognitive health. You don't have to be a doctor to see something is very wrong. He reminds me of Uncle Bruce in so many ways, my aunt who nursed her brother through Alzheimer's disease, Joe Scarborough, who has known Trump for years, said in 2017 that Trump's mental confusion reminded him of his mother who had Alzheimer's for 10 years. Quote, "It's getting worse. And not a single person who works for him does not know he has early signs of dementia," unquote. He said of Trump last year on his MSNBC show. To mental health professionals like me, the red flags are waving wildly. In January 2018, over 70 of us wrote a letter to the president's physician, Dr. Ronnie Jackson, urging him to administer a cognitive exam during the president's physical because we had seen a marked deterioration in his verbal functioning, possibly due to cognitive decline. In fact, Dr. Jackson did administer the Montreal Cognitive Assessment, a screening tool for dementia, and Trump passed. But while Trump bragged that this proved his superior intelligence, this 10-minute screening test, where one must identify a camel, draw a clock, and repeat three numbers backwards, only ruled out full-blown dementia. We argued in a subsequent op-ed that these findings did not rule out the early stages of dementia. We also predicted that if this was organic cognitive decline, it would continue to get worse. And since that op-ed, more than a year ago, it has gotten worse. Memory loss is the symptom most closely associated with Alzheimer's. While Trump famously forgets the names of people, as he did recently when he called Apple CEO Tim Cook Tim Apple, and places, as when he called Paradise, California, pleasure, one could make allowances for such gaffes. More troubling, Michael Wolff reported in Fire and Fury that at the end of 2017, Trump failed to recognize, quote, a succession of old friends, unquote, at Mar-a-Lago. Trump, 72, seemed to hit a new inflection point last week when he said, quote, my father is German, right? Unquote. Was German. And born in a very wonderful place in Germany, unquote. In fact, his father was born in the Bronx. And it was his grandfather who was from Germany. Dementia Care International says, quote, a person may start to mix up relationships and generations, unquote, in the second stage of dementia. One day, when my Uncle Bruce was agitated, he cried out for me, saying, call John, he's a rich lawyer. He'll know what to do, unquote, even though it was my father who was the lawyer, not me. That was not in the early phase of the illness. That incident took place a few months after Uncle Bruce was forced to enter the nursing home. He goes on, and it is a very interesting article. Again, I remind you, it is not a layman's perspective. It is a psychologist writing and a former assistant professor at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. John Gartner, G-A-R-T-N-E-R is his name. Okay, so the question is, when will this be taken seriously? I remind you that even before he took office, I said there's something wrong with this president. There's something wrong with him. Well, I'm not a professional, so I accept, you know, my observations may not count at all. But I saw it. And when he took office, I again said it several times. There's something wrong with this president. Late last year and this year, we saw several commentaries and articles appearing calling attention to exactly the same thing. In fact, CNN had titled one of its commentaries, "There's Something Very Wrong with the President." Now, this is not being said as a kind of, you know, attack or a round the way attack or to gloat at something because we think the president is in trouble. It is being said because this is no ordinary person. This is the president of the United States. This is the top guy. And if there is something wrong, either they're not telling us, or maybe we're wrong. But, okay, I'll accept it if you direct that comment to me, since I'm not a professional. But professionals have pointed out time and again, there is something wrong with the president, and he needs to undergo thorough screening for mental problems. You may recall the the report issued by a group of psychologists and psychiatrists under the title A Duty to Warn. They admitted they had not themselves examined the president because the president would not agree to be examined, but they analyzed the president's conduct, his behavior, even his pattern of speech. And they found reason to warn the country that there's something wrong with this president. They are professionals. I am not. And they're not being mean. This is not politically motivated. As they said in the report, they actually have a professional duty to bring to the nation's attention that there's something dramatically wrong with the president and it needs to be examined very closely, considering that he is president and head of state and he is the one who starts the process of pressing that button that could lead to nuclear war. This is not a joke. But people have kind of just, oh, well, you know, it's just Trump being Trump. He just has a peculiar personality. But now we have more and more people who are well-versed, who are highly credentialed, who at least should enjoy the benefit of the doubt that they know what they're talking about. Dismiss me. Forget about me. I was going on the basis of what I observed. And it turns out that there are many experts who are now agreeing and saying, there's no question there's something wrong with the president. CNN said there's something wrong with the president. A group of psychiatrists and psychologists have said there's something wrong with the president. And yet, life goes on, indicating there's nothing wrong with the president. So what are we waiting for? For something catastrophic to occur? Because no one wants to say that the emperor has no clothes. And he's allowed to function in situations that are highly sensitive. And he can make switches in the blink of an eye that could be catastrophic for the country and other countries. And still, you know, Congress, people are, well, it's just that he's kind of quirky. And we need to give him the benefit of the doubt. This is not that kind of party. It's not, let's give him the benefit of the doubt. This is a straightforward question. Is the head of state incapacitated mentally, psychologically? Is he seriously incapacitated? Is there somebody else then running the country, making decisions? And we've seen evidence of that. There are people who suddenly have moved into decision-making capacities. They are the ones deciding on policy changes, on day-to-day changes in operations, governmental operations. They are the ones setting the tone. They don't have any right to do that. So we have a series of questions to ask behind, is something wrong with the president? Because it could very well be the case that an invisible group, a group we do not know, knowing that the president is incapacitated, is actually running the country. That could be a possibility. And if it is a possibility, then we better know. Because we know who these people are. We know their mentality. We know they're being informed by forces we have no clue about. And this, therefore, is an issue of national priority. It is not about embarrassing Trump, it's about safeguarding the nation. If we, in fact, have an incapacitated president, a president who could be suffering from Alzheimer's or dementia or some variation of the disease, in which he does not or cannot make sound judgments, in which he is confused, in which he is putting up a front, that he's just being, quote, quirky, unquote, but in fact is in deep mental distress. And this does not constitute an issue for a national discussion. It ought to. And we ought to have some kind of independent means to ascertain just where the president is mentally, psychologically, emotionally. Is he fit for office at this point? And how long has he been getting away with this idea of, you know, carrying out a possible ruse, you know, making people think that Trump is in charge, large and in charge, but in fact, there's nothing happening in his head. He cannot make an easy transition from one thing to the other on his own. And one big clue, he doesn't read. That's a major clue right there. And yet he's talking about, you know, this report, the Mueller report, which is 400 plus pages long. You can't read a 2-page summary or a 4-page summary. What the heck is going on here in the United States? We have a shadow government, a shadow presidency. And now I think we ought to demand to know who is actually president of the United States right now, not just in name, but in fact. Call together a panel of some of the most respected minds in the field. We've had so many people express great concern about this particular issue. We cannot ignore it. Is the president sane? Is the president operating normally? And if he is, then something is wrong with all of us who are saying he's not wrapped together too tight. And yet, he's a commander-in-chief. So it must mean that somewhere there's a group of military people who are actually taking care of that, making it look like Trump is in charge. On the issue of domestic policy and, you know, day-to-day decisions that are being made, who is making those decisions? Do we, as the American people, do we deserve to know? And to know the truth. and to know it now. Well, that does that. I swore by everything holy I was going to leave this topic alone. And here I am again because of developments over the weekend, and it concerns the Minnesota Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, who has let it be known that she has received a torrent of death threats to the point where Nancy Pelosi, the head of the Democratic Party, Democratic Party leader, is asking for special protection for her and communicating that she has concerns for her safety. All right. I know. I'm going to be criticized for what I'm about to say, but it has to be said. So, in fact, Ilhan Omar has achieved a major strategic objective, and that is to emerge from everybody else within Congress, especially the Congressional Black Caucus, the Progressive Caucus, or any other caucus, as a lightning rod. She's now the center of attention, and she has achieved a kind of parity with President Trump, because now the war is a war of words between the two. Okay. That means that the entire caucus has to, not that it has to, but it will. It will find it very difficult to ignore this development while taking care of business. This now has become business. And it's all because, I say it again, because the Congresswoman refused to just shut up. You get elected, you're provoking a kind of war of words, you're provoking a contention when your job should be to concentrate on why you were elected and what the priorities are in your district and in finding out ways in which you can advance the issues on the table already, how you can help get those through, and how you could learn the processes in Washington, D.C., so that in the very near future, when you are ready to do battle, you know how to do it. Instead, she concerned herself with this war of words. And she should know, as she has discovered now, a lot of people put a lot of stake in words. You're not ready to fight. You have no troops, like right now. With all these death threats, you should have your own posse taking care of your security. You have no help. You have no troops. You have no backup. Because it was more important to you to emerge from the pack as a special person. Well, you're special now. You're very special. Because you have placed yourself in a situation for which I would say you are primarily responsible. responsible, not exclusively, but primarily you're responsible for the situation you're in. Now, I'm not suggesting that, you know, she has to kowtow and she's got to, but the issue she's arguing, first of all, are not current on the list of things to do. She's arguing about things that have gone and about which you can't do anything legislatively now. She's arguing from a very closed perspective as a Muslim woman. You weren't elected to be a Muslim woman. You are a Muslim woman. But you were elected to represent a district. Stay focused. That doesn't mean you don't have opinions. That doesn't mean that you are deeply concerned about certain things. Fine. But you're not ready for a fight. You are not ready for a fight. And so you put on yourself in pursuit of standing out from the crowd. Yes, there's a Congressional Black Caucus, and then there is Ilhan Omar. This is what happens. And people who care about you, people who want you to succeed, have been trying to tell you you're not yet ready to fight. You don't have the tools, you don't have the people, you don't even have the argument. Learn about Congress. Learn about how you could fight there and win. These extraneous speeches that you're making have nothing to do with your legislative mandate. And I remind you, this is not especially targeted at you. You're not the only Muslim in Congress. Muslims have been in Congress for decades, and they've been doing the work. They've been fighting. You don't read about any big noise that they're making. You're not reading about, inappropriate things that they're saying, but they are fighting. And so you come in, and now everything is fractured. You fracture an already precarious organization that needs to heal itself. You further fracture it. You have people arguing at odds because now the task, the primary task, has become, how do we defend you as if you deserve it? You don't deserve it because you've been reckless and in some cases just downright stupid. You put your own self at risk. And now, on top of everything, you're insisting that it is everybody else's job to take care of you, stop everything. Take care of you because you're in danger. That's what I said to you a long time ago. Your mouth put yourself in this position. And for no reason. You are invited to make a speech. Lots of people are invited to make a speech. Your own sense of judgment should tell you and should remind you, you're no longer running for office, you have it. But you must keep in mind why you're there. And you must keep in mind the real conditions that you are working with while you're there. You will notice the outpouring of outrage has been minimal. You've offended quite a few people by your actions. You're fracturing an already precarious organization and not caring about the link between your mouth and what they will end up having to deal with as a group. You care only that the light shines on you. You're the bravest, you're the smartest, you're the greatest. Fine, you're also under death threat. And you have nothing of your own to fight with. Think about that. We need you. We need a feisty person, but someone who is smart. Someone who understands what the priorities are. And the priorities are to serve your district. I wouldn't be surprised, based on Congresswoman Omar's conduct, that she's looking at someday being president of Somalia. So what looks like disjointed action right now has a long-term purpose. And again, I didn't just come to this conclusion. These are the suggestions and hints that you're giving me and others. So think, rethink what you're doing. Rethink what you're doing. Watch your mouth. And stay the course. Act like you understand what it means to struggle as a group. Stay the course. And force yourself not to say anything that would cause an uproar. But that is exactly what you want. Okay, so that's the second thing I wanted to say. Then I wanted to talk a little bit about I have my notes here. I just can't read them. Oh, there you go. I found my glasses, so I'm good. Julian Assange. Now, quite a long time ago, when the world was madly in love with Julian Assange, of course he could do no wrong. Same applied to Edward Snowden. And especially the so-called progressives and so-called radicals and whatnot, they loved it because these people were giving the system some business. I cautioned at that time that it is not enough to just wildly praise these people. we also have to keep in mind that the power, the awesome power that they have through their skills, through their abilities, could easily detach them from the world. And we had no idea, we on the outside looking in, we had no idea whether there was such a mechanism to help maintain some kind of balance, because this is very ego-centric stuff. One guy could turn the whole world upside down. I shared with the listeners the direct words from Edward Snowden discussing, you know, the state of affairs after he had left the country. And what did I was especially careful to point out what was there in his own words. Unbridled racism, contempt for working people. Yes, he was all about the state and all of that. That's great. We get that point. But he was living very well. Nothing in his own words suggested that he saw himself as part of global struggle. None of that. And he said some rather inexcusable things about Spanish-speaking people. All the while, he was agreeable to being a double agent, working for the government and supposedly working for us. We still don't know to this day which is true. Here we have Assange, and the only position that people seem to be taking is that he ought to be left alone, he ought to be given freedom, and there should be no investigation of charges against him because he's a hero. He is anti-establishment and he's a hero. Well, let's look at the facts. Julian Assange, at the time he was taken in at the embassy of Ecuador in London, he was being sought on charges of rape, sexual assault. This is not a small matter. And because the so-called radicals do not intend to have that looked at, they gloss it over so that if you raise the question, something's wrong with you. And these are people who swear they're for women's rights, they're anti-sexual assault and anti-rape and so forth, but they defended him all the way. And that he should not make himself available to answer to a warrant for his arrest, to bring him back to Sweden to answer these charges. I don't see anything wrong with a government deciding they are going to pursue a citizen because there have been charges. But there's this new narrative, and from the beginning, we are to accept that he never committed these crimes, ever. And if you're a good revolutionary and progressive person, you automatically will take the position that he is to be defended outright. There's a contradiction there. And then we get to hear that he agreed because he received shelter since 2012. He has been given diplomatic protection at the Ecuadorian embassy. Ecuador is not a rich country. It's a tiny country, and it extended its courtesies to you, putting the country itself in jeopardy with the rest of the world by seeming to grant you immunity. That's what this is. We're getting reports of his erratic behavior, that things that the embassy asked him to do, you know, keep his room, however tiny it was, to keep it clean and in order, to clean up after your cat, to bathe regularly, brush your teeth, observe hygiene. And that he did none of those things and then broke the letter and spirit of the agreement that the Ecuadorians thought that, you know, they had worked something out. They're feeding you. They're watching over you since 2012. No cost to you. And this is a poor country. And then, allegedly, they discover that he broke the agreement, that he was doing covert work from the embassy. He was not supposed to go back to his internet thing, but he did. He tried it. And he succeeded on many occasions. He actually did it. And now people are getting angry with the Ecuadorians. By the way, I should mention that the embassy says that one of the things that he did was to smear his feces on the wall. Whether he was in a state of mental decline or whether this was his way of saying, the hell with you, I don't like you people, even though they're taking care of him and giving him the benefit of their protection. So since he was arrested, there are all kinds of arguments flying around that now are impugning the Ecuadorians. And making it appear that they were the ones who breached the arrangement or the contract that they had worked out. And I'm saying no. If that's what you're saying, then this merits an open discussion, which, of course, the Ecuadorians won't do. This is a diplomatic matter because now they're in trouble. In the process of trying to protect Assange, to give him cover, to give him a place while he gets his act together, they are now accountable for breaking many laws. Sometimes you just can't win. And the community does not have the integrity enough to say, we recognize that he did certain things he was not supposed to do. But understand that he was mentally deteriorating They don't even have the decency to say that. They're still talking about he's blameless. Well, we have some time to take one or two questions at 888-874-4888. Let's hear what you have to say, and we'll see how it goes. But we're under tight time constraints. 888-874-4888. Okay, is there anyone there? I'm seeing something here. Todd from California, you're on the air.
I'm a first-time caller, and I've listened to you for several years, and I really appreciate what you do. You convey your thoughts very eloquently, and I appreciate that. I'm calling
Thank
today.
You.
You're welcome. I'm calling today because you had mentioned something about Julian Assange, and I'm not an expert on his situation, but on April 15th on PRN, there's a show called The Whistleblower Newsroom by Celia Farber. Yes.
Yes.
And she actually reads and speaks Swedish, and she brought forth information from the Swedish newspapers about his arrest and rape charges, and it's very different than what we are led to believe. So it might behoove you and many other folks who have the idea that he did some terrible things in Sweden to listen
no,
to
no,
that
no,
show.
No, I have to say this. I didn't say he did it. I said he was charged. And like any other person, the presumption of innocence is with the person charged. But he took it upon himself and others who backed him, and I appreciate that too, because he's a hero in a particular community. They spirited him away. He never stood before a court and defended himself on these charges. That's why they had to issue a warrant for his arrest. His thing is, I'm not playing by your rules, and I appreciate his argument. But you also can't dismiss out of hand that these things have a procedure. A charge has been made, and I beg you to remember that these groups are all about women's rights. So when you take the position that Julian Assange need not answer to these charges, you are by virtue saying the women's rights here are unimportant. His rights are more important than theirs. That's the issue to me. I don't know whether he's guilty or is innocent or whatever. All I know is he has been charged.
Yes.
Right. Okay. And he should come before the court and defend himself against these charges.
Agreed. If you have some time to listen to that show, I think it will bring some more light forth. And
it's a great show, but I also have some expertise of my own, and that is how courts work. You can't decide that was a fight that belonged in Sweden. You don't run away and then presume that you can make your points from abroad. No. You stand up like a man to the charges. You get the best legal help you can possibly get, And you defend yourself. But there is a warrant for your arrest. You've been hiding out since 2012. And the expectation is that people should automatically believe you. I'm not one of them.
No, you, of course, you make a strong argument. But would you give it a listen to that April 15 show?
Oh, yes.
I think you might.
Yes, I will.
I think you might.
It's a good show. It's a very good show. I certainly will try and give it a listen. Thanks so much for calling in. Ron from Connecticut, you're on the air.
Greetings, Professor Utrecht.
Thank you so much, Ron.
I pray almost every day, but I'm distracted, for your continuing good health and for your safekeeping.
Thank you so much. So let's get to it because we're running out of time.
On another thing, your callers should never, ever give you a hard time. Last week, one of your callers gave you a very hard time, and I think he's feeling rather guilty about it right now. Hopefully he is, if he has any shame. All right, so I don't want to really talk about Assange, except to say that I heard several months ago that the charges were dropped, that two women involved in the accusations recanted. So I don't know about that. Maybe we should research it. Going to the president, who is nothing more than a presider, Donald Trump is, he's acting out judgment, legislation, and execution of the law. The presider.
Well, actually, it's not that so much that he's doing it, it is that he's being permitted to do it.
Yes, yes. But he would be dictator. But I want to say, your two-part question, is he sick? A. B, is he in control? You are on the right track, Professor. He's very sick.
Professor.
Professor Utrecht. He is not in control.
Well, thank you.
So,
thank you for your call. We've run out of time, unfortunately, and we've got to go. But you can feel free to call again tomorrow, and we pick up from where you're leaving off today. Thanks a lot, Ron. That brings us to the end of our program today. And I only encourage us. I don't want you to think like I think. You know, I'm not going to be dogmatic. I want you to think for yourself. Put the pieces together for yourself, and you will discover, sometimes to your own dismay, how intent these systems are at absolutely controlling us. But when you start thinking for yourself, that's a lot of immunity you get against them. They can't mess with your head. So keep that in mind. As I said, we return to each other tomorrow. A lot of other subjects I wanted to tackle that I haven't, but we'll get to them little by little. And most importantly, your thoughts. All right. That's it for today. Thanks so much. We'll meet each other again tomorrow. Bye-bye.